Chapter 1. Lighting Up the Chrysler Building. The wet faces of patience and fortitude, two marble lions guarding the cascading entrance to the New York Public Library, stare into the dusk, which is slowly settling between the buildings. The air darkens and hangs motionless and excited over the biggest and greatest town on Earth. A man in a dark raincoat crosses Fifth Avenue and avoids a group of tourists with dangerous umbrellas. He steps over a puddle of water along the granite curb and heads to the balustrade at the corner of 42nd Street. He turns back, looks up at the dark eastern sky, pulls binoculars from his pocket, and wipes away raindrops from the lenses with his sleeve. He directs his gaze to a tall building behind Grand Central Terminal, examining every light on its spire. Rob is the general superintendent of the Chrysler Building. He is responsible for the smooth operation of the building's mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems. His team of in-house union workers are dedicated to the many duties required to keep the building running. His daily list of jobs include verifying that the maintenance crew keeps the elevator machine rooms ticking like a clock, so that each one of the 30 Art Deco-style passenger elevators reaches its optimum speed and accelerates and decelerates with the gentleness of a ballet dancer. Like old-fashioned limousines, the elevator cars depart from the great lobby, clad in Moroccan red marble, and carry the building's occupants to their destinations. The top elevator machine room is on the 73rd floor and shares it with a giant water tank. What Rob enjoys most is to ascend to the 74th floor and pee inside the coolest bathroom with its triangular window that overlooks the city. Running the Chrysler Building requires a crew similar to that of an ocean liner, listing well over 300 people. A team of operators vouches for the automobile-inspired spaceship's exterior. All of her double-hung windows must open and close, all her facade bricks and stainless steel details withstand the weather, shedding water and channeling it through gigantic storm drains hidden behind the plaster sheet walls, her interior skin. Rob usually wears his blue work uniform, its name tag spelling De Palma, in red thread on his breast pocket. He knows the schedules, like when to check the air duct filters, the building's lungs. The air conditioning units, stored on the mechanical room floors, pump air through these tin ducts like some brass instruments, bringing oxygen to every occupied floor. Last week, a structural engineer visited the floors within the spire. Rob let him do his work, inspecting the structural condition of the web of riveted diagonal steel members which converged to the point that once determined the Chrysler's supremacy as the world's tallest building, until snatched away a few months later by the Empire State Building. She, the Empire State Building, held on for almost 40 years until in 1970 the World Trade Center towers were completed. Rob is aware of the ship's place in history of the city. The structural engineer came to New York with his family 15 years ago during the time of perestroika, when Gorbachev let most of the Russian Jews leave the Soviet Union. He opted for New York instead of Israel, since many of his friends from college came here. His dream was to visit and touch the steel that framed the race for the tallest building in the world at that time.
We are in the heart of 1920s race to the sky. We are in the stainless steel head of limitless race in the technology of steel frame buildings,
Yuri Tendler said with a thick Russian accent.
This steel! I always wanted to touch this steel. Touch the rivets that hold it together. The tallest structure in the world. Only for a short time, until the Empire State Building stole that title, replied Rob. That is not important, the engineer said with a slight irritation. We always do our best, give our most to the present time. Otherwise we live life only in half. I came to America because I love America and I want to work in America. I have great education from Russia and now I'm giving it to America.
My grandpa used to say that. He came from Italy. He'd always say, America is the best place in the world, even though he missed his olive trees, Rob added.
See, this is the best country in the world because it's free and because it lets anyone to be what they want to be. Live and let live. For us, Jews, that is all we want, said Yuri. When I saw the towers falling, I was weeping. I was crying for all those innocent people in the buildings. I cried for the buildings too.
Yuri had to wipe tears away from his eyes, even now, after all these months.